Hi in the world, I'm John Batchelor. To Syria, the darkness visible of a country torn apart by civil war more than a decade. And yet, I read from the reporting done at the Long War Journal by Bill Raggio, a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. We're also joined by Ambassador Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. We begin with the U.S. officials blame Iran-backed groups for targeting a facility housing U.S. military personnel near Hasaka in northeast Syria. One casualty, an American contractor, I believe. And then that was followed up with the U.S. has carried out airstrikes against Iran-linked groups in eastern Syria after a drone attack killed a U.S. contractor, said the Defense Department. That's Europe reporting. Bill, strike, counterstrike. What is the driver for this, and how is it being conducted by both sides? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, these Iranian-backed Shia militias, which are occupying areas of Syria since the fall of the Islamic State, which ironically the U.S. helped facilitate, have been attacking U.S. forces, which are U.S. forces are sparsely occupying areas in support of what they call the Syrian Democratic Forces. These are really the Kurdistan Workers Party, which is especially a foreign terrorist organization. Syria is an absolute Game of Thrones mess, John. We don't have enough time to lay this all out. But anyway, you have this bizarre situation where the U.S. has hundreds of troops at these small bases smattered throughout Syria and in northern Syria. And these Shia militias, of course, they're Iranian-backed, and they don't want the U.S. there, even though the U.S. helped them defeat the Islamic State. And they've been targeting U.S. forces since the beginning of 2021. The Department of Defense says that these militias have targeted U.S. forces 78 times. And only occasionally does the U.S. respond. So, for instance, it's been 1 year since the U.S. has launched a retaliatory strike against these militias. And the reason for this, John, is that, well, the reasons for the militias don't want the U.S. in there, you know, whether it's hundreds, thousands, or one American soldier inside of Syria, that's more than enough for them, and they will launch the strikes. The U.S. doesn't want to respond because they have a small number of troops there. They're exposed. And the fear is that we'll escalate this situation with a cycle of violence. I think that's the wrong way to look at it. Again, you've had in 2 years, you've had almost 80 attacks by these groups. The U.S. only seems to respond when there's significant casualties, and this is what happened last week. The reality is the Iranian groups, they used a drone in this case, as well as rockets to conduct the attack. And the Iranians are going to continue supporting these Shia militias, which are anti-American. And this is what happens, John, when you try to do an economy of force mission like we're doing in Syria. The U.S. has always looked at these deployments as the number of troops that are in country and not the number of troops we need to accomplish a mission. We have just the right number of troops to keep a lid on this problem, but not enough to deal with these issues meaningfully or defend U.S. forces if they come under significant attack by these Shia militias.
Detail, Bill, what is the mission, the best case for the mission for these U.S. troops? This is a country torn apart, Syria. The whole region is in turmoil because of refugees and cutthroats, not the least of which is Al-Qaeda. So what is the U.S. call success pending that eventuality?
The mission in Syria is to prevent the return of the Islamic State, which occupied large areas where the U.S. forces are. And unfortunately, what's happened here is that we traded one bad actor for several bad actors. Again, the Syria Democratic Forces, which really, again, is the Turkestan Workers Party. This has created significant tensions between the U.S. and Turkey. And that's on one hand. And then on the other hand, you have the Iranian-backed Syrian militias. There's also Iraqi militias in Syria that are backed by Iran. And you have the Syrian government. Oh, and you're right. You do have an Al-Qaeda contingent that is located in northeastern Syria as well. I'm sorry, northwestern Syria as well, in Idlib province. So you have all of these bad actors. None of them are real U.S. allies. One of them is a manufactured U.S. ally because it's the best we can do. That's the mission. It's been a mess from the beginning, and it continues to be a mess, and it's going to expose U.S. forces to attacks like this in the near future.
Mr. Ambassador, I come to you because of serial bad news for your country, Pakistan. In addition to the flooding of earlier this season and the end of 22, and the damage to the crops and the damage to residences, millions of people dishomed. We now have an earthquake, 6.5, measured on the Richter scale. Much of Pakistan and Afghanistan hit. At the same time, there's food insecurity following that flooding, so much so that here at the beginning of Ramadan, they're distributing flour bags, and there's been trouble because of distribution, uneven distribution. And then, in addition to all that, there's the accusation of a price gouging for fuel. So the country, especially along the vulnerable Northwest, is in turmoil again. The aid that Pakistan needs since the flooding, is it forthcoming? Is there any remedy that can speed up the food insecurity to be solved, or at least the damage of the earthquake? Good evening to you.
Good evening. The answer to your original question, is the aid coming in at the pace that is required? The answer is a simple one. No, it isn't. Is there a reason for it? Yes, there is. The international community has been observing Pakistan for a long time. They have lost faith in Pakistan's government's ability to manage external flows of assistance. They believe that they are sometimes used to rectify the imbalance in the country's balance of trade and balance of payments. Pakistan has a serious balance of payments crisis. The Pakistani rupee has lost about a quarter of its value against major currencies, including the dollar, over the last year, and its fall continues every day. On top of it, Pakistan has a serious political crisis ongoing. Since the removal of former Prime Minister Imran Khan, he has been in the streets, he has been dividing society, the society is polarized, government is more or less paralyzed, and the government is afraid that if it does a deal with the International Monetary Fund to stabilize Pakistan's balance of payments and with the rest of the international community to get the aid flowing in more quickly, then it will be accused of playing in foreign hands. Imran Khan has muddied the waters enough for people to suspect all kinds of things, including thoughts like the government might give up Pakistan's nuclear weapons to be able to get aid, which is not even on the cards, but that's the kind of rumor mongering, populist rhetoric. And so on the one hand is the paralysis of decision making. On the other hand are the economic realities. Pakistan needs assistance. Pakistan needs an IMF program. Pakistan needs to stabilize its currency. And none of that can happen because Pakistan's politics is completely paralyzed by one man, his ego, and his refusal to play by any rules.
I ask you to guide me on the geography of Pakistan. Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province was damaged the most by the earthquake. The reporting is incomplete, but hundreds of houses were damaged. We have a minimal figure for deaths, but that clearly is going to climb. Is this a region that is rife with bandits, gangsters, the Taliban? Is this is this the Northwest where there's been trouble?
It is the Northwest. It is the Northwest. It's the province that borders Afghanistan in the Northwest of Pakistan. This is also the area where, if you remember, the Taliban were ensconced and from where they operated during the war against the United States. And before that, the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union. The Pakistani Taliban have become very active since the victory of the Afghan Taliban in Afghanistan, and Pakistan's military has had to deal with that threat as well. So Pakistan really has the trifecta. It has a security threat from Pakistani Taliban, who have been waging terrorist attacks across the country, especially in the Northwest. It has an economic crisis of gigantic proportions with no end in sight. And it has a political crisis, which cannot be easily resolved because the country is so polarized There are pro-Imran Khan judges and anti-Imran Khan judges. There are law enforcement officers who don't want to act because they don't want to be accused of anything untoward by the party that is out in the streets, and a very paralyzed government.
Mr. Ambassador, I've learned over these decades of reporting on this part of the world that ungoverned space and families that are either abandoned or feel cut off from any aid whatsoever raise children who are very easily persuaded to become soldiers of anarchy. That's a general opinion across the world. Is that something that applies to the Northwest provinces, that the Taliban have recruits of the future because of the disorder and the despair?
It's not just the Taliban. It's going to be various jihadi groups. Look, Pakistan, there are two factors for jihadi or extremist recruitment: belief systems, and the other is not having a future in sight. In case of Pakistan, both apply. Radical Islamism has been rife in the country. Many governments, including Imran Khan's, have actually encouraged it. And as a result, what we have is a situation in which people will think, look, here is an opportunity for us to do two things. Make a living, because somebody is paying for our child to become a soldier in the jihad. And second, by virtue of participation in the jihad, ensure a better hereafter. Because after all, this is a belief system that you fight in this world and you get rewarded in the hereafter. So in that sense, the whole country, but especially the northwest of Pakistan, are definitely potential recruiting grounds for Al-Qaeda, for the Taliban, and also for the Islamic State, which is also operational there.
A former ambassador to the United States from Pakistan, Hussain Haqqani, now at the Hudson Institute, Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. When we come back, Afghanistan. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Mash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.